This is The Spark. I'm Martha Woodruff. Writer Jessica Penner's Twitter profile tells us that her novel, Shaken in the Water, is now out and ready for the world, and that she is a nominee for the Pushcart Prize in Nonfiction for her essay called Mustard Seed. Jessica came in to talk with me a little while ago, and I asked her to tell me more about that novel.
Well, the basic premise of the story with Shaken in the Water is there's a woman, her name is Agnes, and she was born with a very unusual birthmark on her back. And it's a very painful and frustrating thing to her from her whole life. And there's this idea that this birthmark is a special sign, and it's from the old country of the Ukraine in their old colony in the village that said that anyone who has this, it either is meaning it's heralding, you know, tragedy or greatness. And so the whole book is kind of her family, who is, they're always kind of trying to be great in some shape or form. So the book follows three generations. So it's Agnes's generation, then her daughter Hulda, and her son Johan, and then her grandchildren. And so it follows those three family stories all the way through. They're short stories, but they're all interconnected.
Jessica Penner described Shaken in the Water as a novel in stories, and as she puts it, morphing all those stories together took a while.
I'd say at least maybe 2, maybe 3 years in development of that idea. It was very small at the beginning, and then as you know, I kept writing and I kept figuring it out and adding stories. And at first it was all, disconnected. And then I thought, oh, actually this character would do this from this other story. So I started changing names, and then like I'd fix the character. So I was kind of playing around like with a weird puzzle that the shapes keep changing. And so usually that would frustrate someone, but I thought it was really cool.
Read us a bit so we get a sense of the lovely prose.
Okay.
Did you notice how I slipped that compliment in?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, let me find the... So this story, the title is On Full Boat, which means a full beard.
In low German.
And so the main character in this particular story is Peter, and he's towards the end of his life and realizing he needs to ask God for forgiveness for what he has done. The book starts in 1903 and goes till 2007, and this story is in 1971. After he finished his noon devotionals, Peter Harder shaved his head, beard, eyebrows, chest, even his groin. It wasn't easy. He was over 70. His flesh had weakened and drooped so that hairs were sunk within him. His hands shook constantly, and his eyesight was drifting away every day. Peter had figured shaving in the bathtub while Agnes was in town would be the simplest way to go about it, though he suspected that the men of old were more public about the whole business. It turned out to be more difficult than he imagined. While he shaved his groin, his buttocks kept slipping on the rim of the tub until he thought to lean against the wall instead. He couldn't see the back of his head in the mirror, so he was certain broad patches of his hair remained. He was most careful about his beard, slowly moving the razor over his sunken cheeks like he'd driven harvesters, careful to slice into each row with a little overlap on the previous pass. He had never so much as trimmed his beard since he was 16.
Why'd you pick that section, that story?
Well, I think what is very interesting, throughout the writing of the book, some characters become my favorites over time. And right now, Peter and Johan, kind of the two main male characters, have really, kind of spoken to me. And one of the things is that Peter has done a great sin with his sister. And so there's the sin of what's going on. But also, he does a lot of other sins that he doesn't actually consider to be sins. He has a daughter who is shunned from the church, and he shuns, he goes along with it and he shuns. So he's not necessarily asking forgiveness for this, for what he did to his daughter, but he's asking forgiveness for this other sin. And I just think that's very interesting of a perspective of what is sin and what is not sin.
That's what I was going to ask you. You are interested in sin.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's get to you.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted a synopsis of the book. Mm-hmm. Now give me a synopsis of your life.
Oh, dear. Well, I think a synopsis of my life, especially in regards to the book, I grew up in Kansas, and this is where the book is set. Mm-hmm. And I grew up among Mennonites that were from Russia. And I'd always avoided.
Conservative?
They're conservative, but not in the way the Mennonites in my book are conservative.
Okay.
Let me explain that. So there are many different kinds of Mennonites, and some immigrated here much earlier than my ancestors. So the ones that are out here in the valley are mainly Swiss Mennonites, and they all came around, you know, the 1600s. My ancestors didn't come until 1870s, and they came from Russia. And they had basically picked up their community and trucked it over to Kansas and plopped it down and had it exactly the same. They're conservative, but they're not conservative the way Mennonites here, at least the conservative Mennonites here are.
Old
like
order.
Old order, like the dresses and the head coverings and something like that.
And actually, the buggies.
In the buggies. Actually, a lot of Mennonites are very fashionable. Like pictures of my ancestors, they're all wearing quite fancy clothes. So the Russian Mennonites in general didn't wear a plain dress. My particular group was known as the Mennonite Brethren, which is a conservative group that broke off from the main Mennonites in Russia already because they felt like those Mennonites were getting too progressive and they wanted to go back to the basics. They didn't want to have bishops and kind of a hierarchy. They wanted to have it, everyone's the same. And so I really grew up thinking that all Mennonites were like the Mennonites I grew up with. And it's only when I came to college at Eastern Mennonite University that I suddenly realized there was all these things. Like, for example, there's the different kinds of baptism. I grew up with the dunking. I was totally immersed in, and I still feel in my heart that's the true baptism. I mean, as ridiculous as that sounds, my first year, second year at EMU,
I'm laughing at your face,
yeah.
Not your theology.
Okay. No, I figured as much.
Okay, back to your first year at EMU.
So, it was my first or second year, my roommate decided to get baptized, and she joined one of the Mennonite churches. And I went to the service, and I was waiting. I was looking around, and there was no baptistry, which I had grown up with. And I was like, well, maybe there's a stream or a lake or something we're going to all drive out to.
Nature.
And, yeah, nature. Well, then they're calling her up, and they, you know, do the kind of praying and, you know, have her, you know, say that she's made this decision to join the community, that sort of thing. And then they have this little picture, and they just put a little tiny bit on her head. And I was just sort of shocked by that because I had never seen this before.
Shaken in the Water is certainly a book about Mennonites, but it's also a book about cultural change, generational tension, and humanity's general discomfort with otherness. It can be a rough read at times, and Jessica wondered if it might be too rough a read for back home in Kansas, where her proud mother wants her to do a reading.
My Mennonites in this book are not like a set of Mennonites. You can't say these are totally Russian Mennonites.
Mm-hmm.
They're Russian Mennonite heritage, but I have taken stuff
from
the Swiss Mennonites. It's fiction. Like, I've had fun just being like, okay, I like this from this culture, this from that culture, and I'm going to put them all together. And so when my mom was talking about, you know, us doing a reading, at first I was a little like, well, I don't really know. There's sex and incest and homosexuality and things like this. I don't want people to think they're going to be reading, you know, a Christian novel and then they're suddenly, oh my gosh, this happens. This guy has sex with his sibling, you know, things like that. So I was a little nervous about it. But then when I talked to her just the other day, once again, she said that she had talked to one of her colleagues because she teaches at a small Mennonite college. And he had said, yeah, I think she should do a reading.
Jessica Penner writes around a health challenge that involves recurring bony tumors all over her body, including her brain. She had brain surgery on September 11th, 2001.
So right now I am working on a memoir about my brain surgery. I've done the fiction and I still want to write fiction, but I feel like I have to get this memoir out and then I can go back to writing fiction because I have a really good story that I really want to write about, but I can't focus on it because I need to write this first. And I'm not one of those people that can like do multitasking. I have to be focused. So I decided this was back in 2010. I had found out that there was some brain trauma that happened either because of the tumor or because of the surgery, which explained a lot of things that were going on with me physically as well as just emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And I really started thinking about what, you know, that I'd kind of pretended for a long time that it hadn't affected me. Yeah, it was a problem. It was a bad thing, but that's over. But then it came back, you know, and it keeps coming back. This, you know, these brain tumors or other tumors, you know, they keep haunting me. And I realized that, you know, running away from it really isn't going to solve it. I mean, it's still going to come back whether or not I acknowledge it or not. And so that's when I started writing, especially about my childhood, where I believe that I didn't have enough faith in God. And that's why God had not healed me yet.
You believe that as a child?
Yeah, as a child. I believe that because the whole mustard seed. And that's the title of the first essay that I got published was Mustard Seed. That if you have faith like a mustard seed, miracles will happen. And miracles weren't happening to me. And I knew it was because I didn't have enough faith. And so I wrote this memoir essay talking about what I thought was my lack of faith and how things changed over time, how I began being much more open to not being sure about what's going on and the whole thing about, you know, moving mountains. Well, should we really take that literally and things like that? And so that's when I wrote my first essay. And then I got that published in the Bellevue Literary Review.
Mm-hmm.
And then about 6 or 7 months later, I found out that they had nominated me for a Pushcart Prize.
I know. And I was going to ask you that. We were going to get that in.
Yeah, yeah. And so it was just amazing because that's really the first one that I really had sent out kind of like to a mainstream publication. Now you're going to raise the bar right up. Nothing I write is ever good enough.
You'll find an almost unedited version of my entire conversation with Jessica Penner, along with some links and pictures, on the Spark page at WMRA.org. Jessica Penner invites all of us to her Harrisonburg Book Launch Party this coming Tuesday, 7 to 9, Ruby's Lounge downstairs at Clementine. I'll be there. How about you? And now, Spark Book reviewer Chris Edwards reviews Jessica Penner's first novel, Shaken in the Water.
This first book by young Harrisonburg writer Jessica Penner, chronicling a century among descendants of Russian German-speaking Mennonites in rural Kansas, is billed a novel in stories. Some of these stories might by themselves seem incomprehensible, though others are clearer one by one than is the entire novel, which moves loopily back and forth through time. Fatal accidents happen, two involving grain machinery. In wartime, a pacifist farmer narrowly escapes tarring and feathering. In peacetime, another farmer becomes a heroin addict. A young man secretly talks to the lump on his forehead, his undeveloped would-have-been-conjoined twin brother. In a love triangle, three young people find themselves paired three ways. The incestuous pairing and the implied lesbian one contain more passion than the traditional marriage. This author's style can be sparingly magnificent, especially with the setting. Deadly storms sweeping across unbroken skies as folks scramble for cellars. Changing seasons, omnipresent, beautiful. Characters, perhaps heretically, noticing evolution in the ubiquitous wheat crops. Subtle curves adjusting for the Earth's arc along the landscape's otherwise straight roads. A major character, Hulda, having survived a tornado unharmed, gets shunned for refusing to replace her blown-away head covering. She becomes a solitary but legendary local figure, dispensing kindness and gentle wisdom. Perhaps the most central figure is Nora, an already mysterious young woman who, after death, becomes, more strangely, a white tiger. At least I think that's what happens. The tiger gives brief audiences to those relatives who seem to need and be accessible to her, taking on the work God lacks time for, she explains once. For me, she's Harvey the White Rabbit, meeting Dorothy's Good Witch, along with the title character of Toni Morrison's Beloved. I read in some online crib notes that Beloved is a revenant, meaning a visible ghost or animated corpse. Nora, like Beloved, may represent a family struggle with haunting issues over time. The title of the novel, Shaken in the Water, comes from the first book of Kings 14, verse 15, about God's wrath. In depicting often hard lives, made harsher by taboos for such items as red fabric, the author can be remarkably forgiving. She portrays people who sometimes act with random cruelty, but there's no consistent villain. This is not an easy read. You may want to take notes, scribble a timeline and/or family tree, and reread parts. I did. It will help if you know German. I don't. There are untranslated snippets of dialogue, also hymns. For a difficult novel like Beloved, you might search critiques for meanings and symbols and find heavy-handed didacticism. Here's a new one that we must puzzle for ourselves. I'm Chris Edwards.